Let us understand about control and certifying authorities, controller and certifying authorities. Who is a controller? Appointment of controller and other officers are done by central government to regulate the certifying authorities. What are the functions of controller? The controller is going to exercise supervision over all the activities of the certifying authorities, whether they are not taking any bribe to give falsifying any digital signature or electronic signature, whether they are going through all the proper requirement of the records in the application of the subscriber or not. Certifying public keys of the certifying authorities. Even the public keys of the certifying authorities are checked by the controller to see to it that they are authentic and proper, and they are going to lay down certain standards which the certifying authorities are supposed to follow, and if they are not following, even that they can be punished. Well, even they specify the qualifications and experience of certifying authorities employees. Who can be a certifying authorities employee? What should be their qualification? What should be their experience? All those things are standardized and given by the controller, so that we have got a genuine person who becomes a certifying authority. Specifying conditions, they are going to specify certain conditions to be fulfilled before giving the authentication of the electronic signature certificate. They are going to have the proper contents to be followed in written form or printed or visual material as well as advertisements. They specify the form and content of electronic signature certificate as well as the key required for the electronic certificate. For example, it is the public key. Specifying the form and manner in which the account shall be maintained. They are also going to give us the terms and conditions of appointment of auditors who are going to audit these certifying authorities. Let us understand what are the various powers given to the controller. They can delegate to their subordinates or to the authorized department. There can be assistant controllers, they can be assistant collector, it can be collector, they can delegate their functions to them, because ultimately there are a lot of electronic signatures generated all over, and it is very difficult for the controller to look after each and everything. So, it is their power to delegate these functions to their assistants or to the collector or to the assistant collector. They can investigate any kind of contravention done in the electronic signature certificates or digital signature certificates. They can give directions what to do, how to go about it, and how to pinpoint what are the mistakes done in that or what are the lacuna in that and how to correct it. They can suspend the certificate, they can cancel the certificate also if required. They are going to assess all the computers and electronic data available, and they can look into it for the authentication of things. Now, let us understand about certifying authority. Who are the people who can apply to become a certifying authority? Any individual citizen of India having a capital of rupees 5 crore or more in his business or profession can apply. Any company having paid up capital not less than 5 crores and net worth of not less than 50 crores also can apply to become a certifying authority. Any firm which has got, say, paid up capital of 5 crore or net worth of 50 crore, where the partnership firm is there, even they can apply. And what are the conditions to be complied with for the application of this? One is an individual or a firm or a company as suggested earlier, they can submit a performance bond or a banker's guarantee from a scheduled bank in favor of controller for an amount not less than rupees 50 lakhs. So, we have already seen who can apply to become a certifying authority. So, let us understand while applying for this, what all things is supposed to have as the content of application. It has to be made in form A given under the law. A certification of practice statement should be given. A statement which includes the procedures for identification of the applicant also should be given. That means how they are going to find out the identification of the applicant for digital signature or the electronic signature. They should know what is the scope of anticipated digital signature certificate technology. There should be management and operations to be outsourced, copies of the business registration, past insolvency if they have been, they have become insolvent in past any time, that also they are supposed to inform, and in that case they may not be given the authority to become the certifying authority. How they are going to generate, how they are going to issue the digital or the electronic certificate, and how they are going to be audited by the approved auditors, all those things they are supposed to write in their application. They have to give undertaking to submit the performance bond as told earlier from a scheduled bank of 50 lakh rupees. Now, when the certifying authority is going to give the issuance of license, within 4 weeks of the application, the controller is going to give the license to the certifying authority. Validity of this license will be for 5 years from the date of issue. Commencement of operation by licensed certifying authorities will occur only after confirmation to the controller it has generated private as well as corresponding public key and submitted the public key to the controller, then only they can start the business. Now, once we have known that the certifying authority has been issued the license to become certifying authority by the relevant forms in form A and by the who can apply we have seen, and once it has been given, naturally it is going to last only for 5 years. So, how you are going to renew this certificate, that is given under rule 15(3), non-refundable fee of rupees 5000 by bank draft or pay order should be drawn in the name of the controller to renew the license. An application for renewal to be given before 45 days of expiry of the license. They have to give this application of renewal before the license expires at least 45 days before that. When the controller can refuse the license to be given, when the information of business is such whereby they get doubt that they are misusing this, or in process of winding up, when the certifying authority is in their business is in process of winding up, naturally they will not be given the renewal of the license. If any of the partner of the firm or the owner of the company who has been given the certifying authority, suppose he has been convicted under Indian Penal Code for some or the other crime, he will not be given the license. Or if the controller has invoked the performance bond given by the subscriber or by the applicant, then also it will be, it will not be given, it will be refused. Once it has been refused, whether it can be revocated or not, that also there are criteria given, and when it is suspended for a few months, then it may be revocated, or they are told that you cannot practice as certifying authority at all, you have to surrender the license to the controller. Now, what are the obligations and duties of certifying authority? The certifying authority has to follow the due procedure given under the law. They may make use of any hardware, software, all the procedures that are secure from intrusion and misuse. They have to ensure that whatever procedures they are using, it should not be misused by anybody else. There should not be any intrusion of a third party, whereby they can make some changes which may be difficult and wrong. There has to be reliability, and they have to adhere to all the security and privacy of the electronic signatures, and they have to ensure that it is taken care of by them. As far as the cross certification is concerned, if there is any dispute, they have to refer this dispute to the controller and for arbitration or for resolution of this dispute. Unless that is done, they cannot operate. Security guidelines for certifying authorities are such where they shall have sole purpose, sole responsibilities of integrity. Integrity of the certifying authority is very, very important. They have to be honest, they have to be punctual, they have to be trustworthy, reliable. Integrity is extremely important. Secondly, confidentiality has to be maintained by them, and protection of the information has to be there, otherwise it will be misused by a third party, and then it can lead to a lot of frauds and problems for the subscriber. There has to be compliance by all the employees of the certifying authority. There are certain disclosures to be made by them. One is its electronic signature certificate, any certification practice statement which is relevant thereto, or if there is any notice of revocation or suspension has been given by the controller, any other fact that materially and adversely affect the reliability of the electronic signature certificate, they have to immediately intimate to the controller and in the public gazette. As far as the information is concerned, they have to be kept confidential. Digital signature certificate application, whenever it has been given to them, they are not supposed to reveal it to anybody else. Whether it is approved or rejected, information collected and subscriber agreement, all these things they are supposed to keep absolutely confidential. Now, when the audit should occur, it should be done at least annually. In the audit, they are going to audit various aspects of the certifying authority. There are approved auditors by the controller who are going to audit this. They are going to ask for their security policy, what is the policy document for the security of this electronic signatures. They are going to see the physical security of all the assets that are there in their office. They are going to see the technology which they are using, and they are going to evaluate whether it is appropriate or not. They are going to see the relevant certification practice statement which is given by them, and whether they are complying with all the aspects of the practice statement that has been given by the certifying authority. They are going to review and analyze all the contracts between the subscriber and the certifying authority, and whatever regulations have been given by the controller to the certifying authority, are they following absolutely to the point or not, in the right spirit or not, the auditor is going to check each and everything. Now, let us understand what is the relationship between the auditor and the certifying authority. Can he be related to the certifying authority? No, not at all. He should be absolutely an independent person. He should not be preparing any software or hardware for that, he cannot be a vendor for that certifying authority office for any kind of software or hardware. There should not be any current or past financial, legal or other relationship with the certifying authority. What do you think, my dear friends, why it should be like that? Well, if the auditor is having any financial legal relationship with the certifying authority, there is going to be a bias and he is going to give positive report about this certifying authority, even though there can be some lacuna. And hence, under law, it is always seen to it that the auditor has to be absolutely independent. He should not be a vendor providing anything to the certifying authority. He should not be having any relation as far as the financial or legal aspect is concerned with him, that he is not an advisor legally to the certifying authority also, because ultimately he is getting money from that certifying authority for the services he is providing, and it is likely to bias him in the favor of certifying authority, and he cannot remain independent. So, these are the rules given by the controller as far as the appointment of the auditor is concerned. Well, database of certifying authorities will consist of the name of the person, the nature of business he is doing, what is the PAN number of this permanent account number as far as the income tax is concerned, what is the web address, where he is going to function, the location, the detail, address, etc. Public key corresponding to private key also he is supposed to clearly reveal that. Current as well as past versions of certificate practice statement should be given by the certifying authority. There should be a clear cut time stamp which he is going to affix to the subscriber, which should indicate what is the date when it has been given, what is the time when it has been given, whether the grant of license is there or not, confirmation of adoption of certification practice statement. Whatever certification practice statement has been given by the certifying authority to the controller, in that stamp it should be mentioned, confirmed that he has given this, and there should be when the commencement of operation has occurred, started by the certifying authority, all these details has to be there on the timestamp of the certifying authority. Well, we have understood what are the various powers of the controller. Let us understand what are the various powers of the central government for this act. They can block the public access of any information through any computer resource in case they feel that there is problem for the interest of the sovereignty and integrity of India, in case they feel that for the defense of India it is going to have any adverse effect, in case they feel that by disseminating this information the security of the state can be compromised. So, in that case they can legally ban to transmit this kind of electronic message for any computer, okay, and they can delete that also. To monitor and collect traffic data or information through any computer resource, they have got the right to monitor from one computer to other whatever is being transmitted or any information going through any computer resource, they can do that. So, that is how we are seeing today that some of the pornographic messages or videos etcetera are being caught by the government, because they can access to any data that is being transmitted, and then of course then they are punished. Directions to state government to carry in the state of any provisions of the act or any rule, regulation or order. So, it is the power of the central government to direct state government authorities to follow certain rules and regulations. If there is any change, they can be told to modify their rules and regulations accordingly also. So, let us understand the Cyber Regulations Appellate Tribunal. If somebody is punished and if he is not satisfied with the order given by the court under the Information Technology Act, then there is availability of Cyber Regulations Appellate Tribunal also for the subscriber. When it is established? It has been established under Section 48 of the Central Government. It consists chairperson and other members appointed by Central Government, which is in consultation with the Chief Justice of India. A chairman has to be having the experience of being a judge of the High Court and around 10 to 15 years of experience areas, and similarly the members also have to have certain qualifications and experience mentioned under the Act, otherwise he cannot become a member of this. Areas in relation to which each bench of the Cyber Regulation Appellate Tribunal may exercise its jurisdiction has been prescribed under Section 49 of the Central Government Act. Even what are the qualifications of chairperson as well as members has been specified by the Central Government, and it has to be followed while making them chairman or member of this appellate board, appellate tribunal. Now, what is the procedure for filing the application in the cyber appellate tribunal? It has to be filled in the form A with the prescribed fees of rupees 2000, and there should be endorsement taken by registrar on the same date has to be there. What are the orders given by this tribunal? After analyzing the application of the aggrieved party, they are going to give the final order within 6 months of the application made. Procedure and powers of Cyber Appellate Tribunal, it is guided by the principle of natural justice. Now, what we mean by principle of natural justice? Well, principle of natural justice means, depending on the crime, the punishment should be there proportionate to that. If somebody is stealing 5 rupees, you cannot remove that person from the job. Similarly, if somebody has done some violation or there is some contravention of the Act of Information Technology, it does not mean that you are going to remove the license permanently for that person. He may be, as per the law, whatever punishment is due, which is proportionate to the crime of that person, you can give him that kind of punishment. It can be in the form of imprisonment, it can be in the form of fine, it can be both, depending on the crime which is there. So, they have to follow the principle of natural justice. The powers of the chairperson and members of this tribunal are as vested in civil court. That means they can summon a person, they can call, they can verify all the documents and various other things which is similar to the civil court. What are the limitations? The limitations are as per the Limitation Act 1963. Well, what is the procedure and power of the Cyber Appellate Tribunal? Now, surmounting and enforcing the attendance of any person who is the person who has committed some crime, you can surmount, you can enforce him to attend in front of you and give the evidence. You can examine him, cross-examine him on oath. You can require the discovery and production of documents or other any other electronic records. For that, you can ask him to produce all those records and analyze them, review them. You can review the evidence on affidavits also. You can issue the commissions for the examination of witness or documents as well as reviewing all the decisions. The witness also has to give the evidence on oath, dismissing an application for default and deciding it ex parte. If you are satisfied that definitely some crime has been there which is grievous enough, you can dismiss his license. Or if you feel that the crime has not occurred, it was a false alarm given by somebody to harass that person, even you can dismiss an application for default and decide it ex parte also based on your investigations done. In this case, civil court does not have jurisdiction. It has to be done by the cyber appellate tribunal. You cannot file a suit in the file a case in civil court for this. You have to go to this cyber appellate tribunal, because the power vested to cyber appellate tribunal is for the as per the Information Technology Act. Any other civil court cannot take this kind of case. Appeal to High Court is possible. A person aggrieved by any decision or order of the Cyber Appellate Tribunal may file an appeal to High Court, but he has to file the appeal to the High Court within 60 days of the order given by the Cyber Appellate Tribunal. Compounding of contraventions. No compounding of contravention if it is done within 3 years from the first contravention. You cannot accumulate this thing if it is done within 3 years and punish him more for that. Okay. Recovery of penalty or compensation, arrear of, suppose the person has been given an award that so much of penalty of say 5 crore rupees you are supposed to pay, or 50 lakh rupees you are supposed to pay, and he is not paying. How you can recover that? You can recover it by arrear of land revenue, by license suspended till penalty is paid. So with this, let us understand in some more detail about adjudication, what are the various penalties and compensation as far as the Information Technology Act Amendment Act 2008 is concerned. Now, who has got the power to adjudicate? Any officer not below the rank of director to the Government of India who possesses the prescribed experience in the field of information technology and judicial or legal experience. So, either he be the judge of the court or he is an advocate, shall be appointed as an adjudication officer by the central government. As far as the government is concerned, the jurisdiction will lead to either the claim for the amount, or it can be injury which does not exceed rupees 5 crore rupees, which is the power within the civil court. Which is the power of the civil court. Factors while adjudging the quantum of compensation will be what is the amount of gain that has occurred because of this crime that he has done, right? Or what is the unfair advantage he has taken because by having some crime, cyber crime, right? Or amount of loss, as well as repetitive nature of the default, also one has to look into. Under section 47, all these things have been prescribed. Now, what is the penalty and compensation for damage to computer? It can be damage to computer, it can be damage to computer system, accesses or secures access, it can be downloads done without the legal sanction and then made viral, given to many people. It can be copying of the data where it is not legally allowed under the act. If somebody is introducing virus to destroy the computer or the destroy the electronic system. If somebody disrupts the computer network so that people cannot do their business, if somebody is deleting or altering the information illegally, or if somebody steals some data or conceals some data which is required by the legalized person, right? All these things come under the penalty or compensation to be given. Compensation for failure to protect data is given under section 43A. Well, what is the penalty for failure to furnish information, return, etc.? It is given under section 44 to the controller or certifying authority, and if you are failed to maintain all the books of account also, you are supposed liable for punishment. Penalty for securing access to a protected system, section 70 for critical information infrastructure also is given under section 70. So, it can be imprisonment, it can be fine as prescribed under the section 70. Tampering with computer source of documents is given under section 65. Punishment for sending offensive messages through communication service is given under section 66A. It can be imprisonment up to 3 years with fine up to say 5 lakhs or more. Punishment for dishonestly receiving stolen computer resource or communication device is given under section 66B. Punishment for identity theft is given under section 66C. Punishment for cheating by personation by using computer source is given under section 66D. What do you mean by cheating by personation? That means instead of the person who has actually written the data, somebody else modifies that and says that it is the same person who has done this. Punishment for violation of privacy is given under section 66E. In the case of both the things under section 66D and E, in both cases the imprisonment is for the 3 years and fine is for 1 lakh. Punishment for cyber terrorism is given under section 66F, where it is punishable with imprisonment which may extend for life, right? Cyber terrorism is something which is a more severe harm can be done to people, and for that the person can be imprisoned for life term also. Punishment for publishing or transmitting obscene material like pornography etc. in electronic form, section 67 has told about that, and punishment for 5 years or fine up to 10 lakhs may be there for this kind of crimes. Punishment for publishing and transmitting of material which depicts children in sexually explicit act etc. in electronic form under section 67B, which is as above. That means what we learned was 5 years or 10 lakhs, right? 5 years imprisonment or 10 lakhs fine. Penalty for failure to comply with order or direction of controller under section 68, imprisonment for 2 years and fine for 1 lakh. Penalty on subscriber or intermediary failing to extend facilities and technical assistance is given under section 69(3) as well as 4. Penalty on intermediary for failing to retain information under section 67C is imprisonment for 3 years and shall also be liable for fine which will be prescribed by the judge. How much fine is to be taken based on the crime, with principle of natural justice, he may tell you. Penalty for misrepresentation under section 71, punishment imprisonment for 2 years and or fine of 1 lakh. Penalty for breach of confidentiality and privacy is under section 72, where again imprisonment for 2 years and or fine of 1 lakh is there. penalty for disclosure of information in breach of lawful contract is given under section 72A, where the punishment is in the form of imprisonment for 3 years and or fine up to 5 lakhs. Penalty for publishing electronic signature certificate false in certain particulars. You already learnt about electronic signature certificates today, but if it has been such where there is some falsification in certain aspects, then under section 73 that person may be imprisoned for 2 years and or fine of 1 lakh. Penalty for publication of fraudulent purpose is under section 74, where the imprisonment can be for 2 years and or fine for 1 lakh. If there is a confiscation or compounding of offences or offences not by individual but by the company itself, then there are separate punishment given under law. So, we have learned in detail about Information Technology Act 2000. We have even learned about the amendment done in 2008 based on the requirement of the nation, and we learned in detail about what we mean by digital signature, what we mean by electronic signature, what we mean by electronic records, what are the appellate body, what are the requirements for the chairman as well as the members for the appellate body, what are the powers of it, and what are the punishments given whenever there is some crime done with the help of principle of natural justice. Thank you.